Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking again about the Kingdom of God. And we're going to take a number of turns. We're in a series that we started earlier this week on other broadcasts, and we're in Session 7. And it's the Jesus series, and we're going to be talking about the world and how the world works. And the world in the New Testament is, there's five different Greek words translated in the world, and the one we're going to be looking at is the one that is defined in your religious concordance, as well as other places, as constitutional order or system of government. Because that word shows up numerous times throughout the New Testament, but they just translate it world, so you think they're talking about planet, and they're actually talking about constitutional systems and orders of governments, the way in which governments are ordered, such as the New World Order or the Old World Order, which are really the same, so there is no New World Order, it's just the Old World Order rehashed. So we're going to look at a number of things to carry this series along, and we've talked about all kinds of things about the time of Christ and what was going on then and everything, but let's bring it up to the modern days, to our time, and see what's happening there. And I want to read a quote from a very famous man, and he knows a lot about making money. And he said once, the way to make money is to buy when blood is running in the streets. And so evidently that was one of his philosophies for making money, and he made lots of money. And of course you don't always know when the blood is going to be running in the streets, and you can't always make that happen, but you can certainly try to make that happen. And, of course, he did. And I won't tell you who said that. I'll let you ponder that for a while. We may return to that before the break or maybe after the break. And we'll find out who actually said that. Anyway, there was a commission I heard about years ago, and I actually saw an interview with the fellow who headed up the investigative part of that commission. And it was called the Reese Commission, and sometimes it was also called the Cox Commission or Committee. But it was best known as Reese Commission. And it was a select committee to investigate the tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations with an investigative committee of the United States for the representatives of Congress between the years of 1952 and 1954. And the committee was originally created by House Resolution 561 during the 82nd Congress. And the committee investigated the use of funds by tax-exempt organizations who don't pay taxes on the things that they make, nonprofit organizations, to see if they were being used to support communist agendas. And the committee was alternately known as the Cox Committee and the Reese Committee, and there was a famous report, the Reese Commission report. And it was put out by a guy by the name of Norman Dodd. And Norman Dodd had worked in banking for years. He had done lots of other things too, but probably most of his career, I would say, was in banking. He was born in New Jersey back in 1899. And so he lived quite a long time. He died in 1987. And I remember when I actually know some of the people that were involved in his interview that's rather famous, and you can probably find copies of it even on the internet. It was by G. Edward Griffin, who I've sat with his brother a number of times. And this interview should be really kind of an eye-opener, especially for people who are sending their kids to public schools, to show you how easy it is to manipulate whole nations once you set up a dependency upon public education. And, of course, public education came along in this last century, in the 1900s. Most schools before 1900, and most education was not done inside public schools. And even then, the public schools were halfway private because a lot of the funds that went to support them was actually donated. Because Americans were extremely charitable people. And so, anyway, he was educated in Yale. He's a Yale guy, and he did a lot of things, but he ended up working in banking, and he was supposed to reorganize the banks after, at least the bank he was working for, the banking system he was working for, after the 1929 stock market crash, which was relatively understood by most economists was orchestrated, but that's another whole subject. But he was supposed to bring about some recommendations to establish what you would call sound banking, which is a little bit of an oxymoron, but there are a lot of things that you could do in the banking industry to create a more stable banking industry. But of course, remember that quote that I gave you, that the way to make money is to buy when there is blood running in the streets. So you don't want things too sound. You want a little chaos, because chaos, you can make a lot of money in chaos. The Rothschilds certainly did this by having an edge on chaos. But when he presented his plan, which is actually a fairly good plan for sound banking, and some of the things that were introduced back then to bring about somewhat of a sound banking system, it wasn't going to be sound. They'd already made too many turns in the wrong direction. But some of those things were around for a while, but they were lifted back under different administrations. One of the major changes was under Bill Clinton's administration. And I always remember seeing Bill Clinton signing a bill that was going to lift all these regulations and allow the banks to do all kinds of things, which would make it totally unsound and would be kind of like a Spitfire climbing to 10,000 feet, 15,000 feet, just kept climbing straight up. And eventually the engine's going to stall out. She's going to crash down out of control. But I saw all the bankers standing around him while they're doing, just grinning like Cheshire Cats. And I mean, it was just, it should have spooked everybody. But most people are kind of oblivious and have got a clue what's going on. And this is important when we're learning about the kingdom of God, because the same kind of things were going on back in the days of Jesus Christ. And of course, the money changers were, in essence, part of the banking system. They were actually a part of a system of social welfare, but they played a role in the banking aspect because they were money changers. And even the word tables, when it talks about them turning over their tables, he is actually turning them over to somebody else. He wasn't flipping them over. And the word table is the same word that is translated into bank elsewhere in the Bible, because that's actually what it means. And so he was having trouble with bankers. If you go back to Thomas Jefferson and some of the early presidents, they were having trouble with bankers too, and they had a lot of things to say about them. We aren't going to go into all that. But in looking at the Dodd's report for the Reese Commission on foundations, he gave a definition of the word subversive, which is a controversial definition in itself. He says, any action having as its purpose the alteration of either the principles or form of the United States government by other than constitutional means. And he would consider that subversive. And he then argued that the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Carnegie Endowments were using funds exclusively on projects at Columbia, Harvard, Chicago University, and the University of California in order to enable an oligarchical collectivism. That's what their goal was. Now, that's a pretty big accusation. Of course, he would have to have some evidence in his investigation. And of course, he got a lot of it. And that's what he talks about to some degree in his interview with Griffin, which you can go look up wherever you want. It's an interesting interview, to say the least. Anyway, he stated the purported deterioration in scholarship and in the techniques of teaching, which lately has attracted the attention of the American public, has apparently been caused primarily by a premature effort to reduce our meager knowledge of social phenomena to the level of an applied science. And that statement alone, you got to remember, this is back in 1952, 54. And we have recently been hearing all about new efforts to change the way in which our educational system works, and we're hearing all kinds of fairly intelligent people coming out saying that it is a continuation of the dumbing down process. It is going to produce even more ignorant children than we're already getting. And of course, I had already discovered what the Rees Commission discovered in 1952 and 1954, because I had been homeschooling my children for years before I came across Dodd. And I had been collecting these school books from all over the country and from different eras of time, you know, back to the 1800s, early 1900s, 1926, 1945, 1954, 1960, 1970. And I was seeing a change in those books. I mean, just going back to 1945, the math problems on the first math problems in the book, I couldn't find a high school student who could answer them all, just the first five. As a matter of fact, most of them couldn't answer any or very few of them. And this is a 1945 fifth grade math book, and they couldn't answer it in high school. But we're not supposed to believe that anybody's getting dumbed down, but you still got your kids in public school, or you're using curriculums that are actually dumbing down your children. And you don't know it because you've already gone to school and you are already dumbed down and you don't even know what you're missing. You lack knowledge. And the Bible talks about that, that you'd be saved except for the you lack knowledge. You lack understanding. Now, they're not just talking about rote knowledge. They're talking about personal knowledge of the real truth and answers in the universe. And they're not letting you know those. And what happens is, by putting your children in school and you yourself being educated in these systems, you are changing the environment of your children because you're part of that environment. There are things you don't know. There will be things that your children don't know. And your children need to know more than they do know now. And you need to know more than you do know now. But of course, that's why a lot of you are listening, to find out more. He goes on to say, in 1933 and 36, a change took place which was so drastic as to constitute a revolution. They also indicated conclusive that the responsibility for economic welfare of the American people had been transferred heavily to the executive branch of the federal government, and that a corresponding change in the education had taken place from an impetus outside of the local community, and that this revolution had occurred without violence and without full consent of an overwhelming majority of the electorate. Now, these are the accusations that are coming out of that commission. A lot of this is direct quotes. He stated that this revolution, quote, could not have occurred peacefully or with the consent of the majority unless education in the United States had been prepared in advance to endorse it. In other words, even before 1933 and 1936, somebody was already altering the education of the American people. Now, it wasn't totally pervasive because much of the American people's education was not in public schools until 1910. And then it was only, you know, just barely tipped over half of the education was done partially through public education. And that public education was still very much influenced. But how would you do this? How would you go about doing this if you were going to want to manipulate the thinking of an entire nation? They go on to say that although the promotion of internationalism and moral relativism, which in other words, that morality is relative and it's not a constant, and internationalism is that, you know, you want to have your League of Nations and your United Nations, and you want to have one government, not all these different factionary governments. They want to have internationalism. They want to get you involved in internationalism. Something that Thomas Jefferson said that you don't want to do, as well as many other people in early America. You don't want to get enmeshed in these other international disputes, because it will weaken and destroy America if they do. It will suck them in. And of course, we've done that anyway. But anyway, by foundations concerns, the committee, it saw their concentrated power as the more central threat. And this is what he was worried about, is these organizations were working together in unison. They had learned to network and were working together. Now, they had to be careful about who knew what, and this is how he got his foot in the door. It's because everybody didn't know exactly what had taken place. But he had a pretty good idea because he knew some of the people that were at these original early meetings back in 1908. Even if benign, this power posed a threat to democratic government. The Rees Committee reported submitted in the midst of this ultimately successful effort to censure Senator Joseph McCarthy. They wanted to censure him. And Joseph McCarthy was exposing some communist activity. The manner in which he was doing it was actually a threat to liberty and freedom. But the threat from communism was real. And there was an effort to create this collect, but he was just going about it in the wrong way. We believe that Christ was seeing the same thing going on at the time that Judea had its Herods and its Herod Antipas and its Roman involvement. They were moving to a socialist state, had been since Herod had instituted baptism. Yeah, Herod instituted a baptism whereby you could join the socialist state and become a member. And then you were part of this one-person socialist state. And Jesus came and was the revolutionary that said, well, I'll show you an alternative. Of course, John the Baptist was already doing it. He was already showing them the alternative. And that's really the essence of Christianity. But nobody seems to know that today because they've redefined religion. And that's one of the tactics that you'll find in the school books. When you go back and see somebody's changing the meaning of words in these school books. Someone is deleting aspects of our history and some of the conflicts in our history. They're deleting them out of the books, and we don't read about them after 1927 and 1930 and 1945. They just more and more disappear. They shrink down emphasis on certain things and raise up emphasis on others. You don't even study history anymore. You have social studies. Kids don't know history anymore. So therefore, they're doomed to repeat the errors of history, and they're rapidly doing this. The report conceded that there are several exceptions, such as he refers to the Institute of Pacific Relations Foundations, have not directly supported organizations which in turn operated to support communism. There were a lot of people like Charles and Mary Beard who were marked historians of the time who were approached, and they were solicited to help with the changing the way in which Americans viewed history. And they would not assist. But now, the most common history books back in those days are not found anywhere. I've actually gleaned a few from libraries that were throwing them out. But when you read them, those books, you get a much different view of history than you do from the history books that you were given when you were in school. So now, if I start talking to you about the real American history, you won't know what I'm talking about. And so how can you explain it to your children? And there was lots of money. And the way they did it was and the Guggenheim Foundation was in on this too, but they got together in different foundations, took over different aspects to rewrite history. And they give fellowships to certain people who would qualify, and they would check these people out. They get these people, are they kind of leaning this way already? And then they would get them rewriting the history, and then they would get somebody else to print the books, and then they would make the books available to schools at a reduced rate, and it didn't cost them anything because they're already tax exempt. So they're actually using their tax-exempt status to change the way in which Americans view history. Now, that would be bad enough if it stopped there, but it didn't stop there. It continued on and did a lot of other strange and bizarre things. Remembering that quote about blood running in the streets. They actually wanted blood to run in the streets. They wanted a depression of 1929. They wanted unions to raise up and fight to get rights. They loved that dialectic. When you're fighting the companies, and the companies are fighting you, and they have to call out police and the National Guard, they love that because they can make lots of money. And they just rise above all that. They understand. They talk about this stuff all the time between themselves, but they're not going to explain it to you. You're the poor and huddled masses. You're the fodder for their cannons. You're the guy they're going to use up because they don't really love you. You're just a commodity. You're just merchandise. You're just something that they can use to get more and more power. And they've got enough wealth and riches and power. They got more than they'll ever spend. But they're addicted to power. And you're addicted to giving them power because you're slothful in the ways of Christ. Christ overthrew Rome. That's what overthrew Rome. I mean, their own corruption caused their downfall, but the society that was born out of the collapse of Rome lived at peace remarkably well for almost 1,000 years. And then they forgot something that you need to learn. Anyway, I quote from his report, some of the large foundations have directly supported subversion. Again, we remember that definition of subversion. In the true meaning of the term, namely the process of undermining some of our vitally protective concepts and principles. Yeah, they were undermining them by changing the way in which we viewed history. They have actively supported attacks upon our social and governmental system and financed the promotion of socialism and collectivism and collective ideas. The report was proposed changes in laws, rules against perpetuities for these foundations to limit the lives of non-institutional foundations 10 to 25 years, the denial of tax exemption to foundations holding more than 5 to 10% of any business, and capital or securities, and a ban on using foundations' funds to support socialism, collectivism, and any other form of society or government, which is at variance with the basic principles of ours, meaning American principles. Existing laws prohibited its use only for support of communism and fascism. The final report was made up by the majority of the committee, 3 Republican representatives, and which included Reese and Wolcott and Goodwin of Massachusetts. The 2 Democrats on the committee did not sign the final report and were extremely critical of it. So what was this all about? Well, there was one thing that was uncovered in the report. They had a legal lawyer who was a woman lawyer who did not believe that these foundations, these philanthropic foundations that did a lot of nice things, were actually doing this kind of stuff or doing anything wrong at all. They didn't even know what they were doing yet. But Dodd knew what they were doing, and he was pretty sure he knew when they were doing it. So he went to the president of the Ford Foundation and asked him if they could take a look at the handwritten notes of their meetings of the foundation. And of course, he was now running this foundation, and of course, he's just a dupe. This is what they do, is they put other people up who kind of have the right idea as far as they're concerned, and they get them to run, you know, the mundane day-to-day activities of a foundation. But when they want to influence something, they kind of come in, they appoint special people to do certain things, and they go to the foundation and say, I think we need to do this. And they create a plausible argument for plausible deniability that, oh, we're going to help education here. These people are going to rewrite these books and make them available because we think that Americans need to know more about America. And the head of the foundation goes, yeah, that sounds great. And all the American people will say, yeah. And I kind of remember if you go on our website, you can find Not My Tea Party. And I refer to, was it Boza? I can't remember the name of the guy who was playing Thomas Paine. And he gives this rousing speech about universal service. And I know several of the people had heard this and they pushed like on Facebook, you know, and they promoted what this guy was saying, and I thought, like, are you even listening to what he's saying? He wanted a return to universal service. Universal service, what's that? That's slavery. And we can show you that's law in the United States today, that there is universal service, and you are slaves, and that's the way it is, but you don't know it because they don't want to call you slaves. because you would not like that. It would make you feel uncomfortable. But anyway, what they did is they opened their doors so they could go in there and examine the handwritten notes. They weren't going to make photocopies or anything, but they could write down what they were reading in there. And Dodd knew that if I go in and do this investigation, nobody's going to believe what I say is written in there. So he got somebody who was an antagonist to what he was trying to prove, and he sent them in to read the notes, and he gave them dates to look. And when they went in, what they discovered was not only were they plotting to change the way in which Americans viewed history, they knew they needed more time to do this, and World War I was coming to a quick end. And they had to do something to extend the war, because the war helped them accomplish their goals. And so they plotted to extend World War I. And these are your philanthropic organizations. The average American has no idea what goes on behind the doors, behind those closed doors, in those smoke-filled rooms. They do go on. And many of the people that are allowing them to go on actually think they're serving the public interest, because they have had altered state of consciousness and thinking. They are part of a collective unconsciousness that does not understand that socialism always leads to despotism. Universal socialism, universal service, always leads to despotism, because it's a concentration of power and power corrupts. And we're going to talk more about this and where all this has taken us and some of the other aspects in religion when we come back from this break. And we'll look at how some of these things fit in. And I'll tell you who said that if you want to make money, you need to buy when there's blood in the streets. I'll let you know when we come back right after this break.
My name is Mark, and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realized that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean, and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Glad to be back here to tell you more about some of these other things that are going on. I mean, you know, I often wonder what am I going to talk about next? And of course, I always bring it back to the keys of the kingdom topic and what Christ was really doing. And they were having the same problem back then with people educating and re-educating people so that they did not understand what the problem was. And they do it by fiddling with the definition of words. And we've done lots of shows showing how they've changed the definition of words because men are ruled by words. That's an actual quote from Augustus Caesar. And he knew that he couldn't enslave the people if you called it slavery, so you had to call it something else and cheer it into place so that people will do it. And it, I mean, you talk about your advertising campaign. And so it's interesting when you hear things about ingredients in food and water bottles and what have you and GMOs that are actually poisoning people. And some parts of the globe, people realize that they're poison, outlaw them. But in America, we seem to be often the last ones to awaken. And what we're seeing in America is that portions of society are waking up and they're seeing little bit. You know, when you wake up, your eyes are kind of squinted and you're just kind of seeing and the room's a little dark and you're trying to make things out and you're just kind of waking up slowly and they see a problem here and they see a problem here. But the problem is really pervasive. And the more you see and the more you act upon what you see, guess what? The more you will see. But then you have to know how to act upon it. And you have to act upon it with patience and perseverance and love in your heart for others. And if you don't do it for that reason, if you do it for any kind of vain reason, it will taint it and you will fall back into another problem later on or somewhere along the line. And so we have to have this approach to learning the truth where we want to know the whole truth and provide for it. Now, the person who had said, I told you, I tell you, I could wait till the end of the show and tell you, but then I might forget and then you'd make me a liar. But the way to make money is to buy when blood is running in the streets. And the Reese Commission uncovered, and by the way, the individual who went in there eventually had a mental breakdown. They came out absolutely stunned and shocked because they saw these people plotting in as early as 1908. Plotting to change the way in which Americans viewed history, planning the whole thing, the handwritten notes, what we're going to do, a strategizing to move towards this socialistic oligarchy, because in socialism you weaken the population where power can be centralized more and more and more, and the people don't know what to do about it because they've been socialized. They've been domesticated is what they're doing, and they've become beasts of burdens. Now, they can buck and holler, but somebody just put a lip bit around their lip and straighten them right out. I mean, you can break horses a lot of different ways, and I've done that where I've been training horses, and I'm not a big one for the lip pinch deal, but I've seen guys have to do it when you're trying to trim up a horse that just wants to be cantankerous. But if you really want to train that horse, and this is the way I did it, my brothers trained horses, I trained horses, and guess what? When we had to go catch horses in the field, they would put their bridles behind their backs and they would carry their grain out in front and shake the grain and everything. I would hold my bridle up in the air like a flag and I would wave it. And my horse would come running to me and it would nose its face right into the bridle because it knew it wasn't going to get anything until that bridle was on it. The other horses thought, well, I'll get some grain and then I'll play hard to get with the bridle and you know, I'll pull away from the rope. The horses were riding the guys. They weren't, the guys weren't riding the horses. But I had taught my horse that this is the way we're going to do it. And so I could jump on that horse bareback and go out and round up their horses that were still, you know, running around playing keep away. But I wasn't the horse trainer. I was the ignorant young brother. But I could get my horse to come to me. I remember once I was out on the desert camping with sheep in the high deserts. And I woke up and saw the horse was just about a spot on the horizon. You couldn't hardly see it anymore. I had her hobbled, so she couldn't walk very fast. But she could walk around and get grass and stuff. But she wasn't very far from heading home. But when I got up and started to break my camp up and everything, and the sheep were already, I could see them moving out to graze, all I did was whistle. And by the time I had the whole camp packed up and in the bags, here comes the horse. She just come right to me. And I say she, because that was another thing that I did that cowboys just ain't supposed to do, is I used to ride mares all the time. And they all said, no, you gotta ride geldings, you can't ride mares. And it's just because they didn't understand how they work. But the mare was often more loyal than a gelding. So anyway, and I also rode studs occasionally. But back to who said the way to make money is to buy when blood is running in the streets? That was John D. Rockefeller, you know, one of the heads of the Rockefeller Foundation. And really, the spirit of what they're doing, it hasn't really changed. They don't have to alter the way in which Americans view history. They've already done that. Now they just have to alter the way that you view politics and the economy. Someone else was influencing people back in these early days, and they said to act wisely when the time for action comes, to wait patiently when it is time for repose, to put man in accord with the tides, sounds natural. Ignorance of this law results in periods of unreasoning enthusiasm on the one hand and depression on the other. So now, does that sound like good advice? It's kind of convoluted. I'm not sure exactly where they're going. To wait patiently when it is time for repose. Put man in accord with the tides, the ebb and flow of the tide. But actually, the whole statement, knowing I know who said it, is deceptive and convoluted and can mislead you because you don't understand what it means to act wisely in times of action. And you don't understand what it means to be in repose. And you don't understand the season of the tides, because this individual is big for creating their own tides and the ebb and flow of society's thinking. And this was Helen Petrova of Blavatsky, who was known by a few other names as well, but her and Alcott and William Judge established a research and publishing institute called the Theosophical Society. And they defined theosophy as the archaic wisdom, religion, esoteric doctrine, once known in every ancient country, having claims to civilization. Again, another one of those statements where I'm not sure, what did she just say? And one of the reasons why is because I know the meaning of esoteric and doctrine and religion. And I also know what the archaic wisdom really was. Because no matter, and this is, we talked about this on one of the conference calls that we have, which you can get on in the Living Network. You go join thelivingnetwork.org. You can meet up with other people who are actually exploring the truths and the secrets of the universe. And that's one of the books that she wrote, is The Secret Doctrines, which are not really so secret. And a lot of the stuff she even said was made up and distorted. But she's kind of the mother of the New Age movement. And I have nothing against the New Age movement. There's a lot of good things in what we call the New Age movement, because that's a real general term. And there's a lot of truths in there. But separating the truths from the lies and the deception is what finding the truth is all about, because every clever scheme has a certain amount of truth to it. And all you have to do is slip in a little bit of a lie, and you can drag people off in the wrong direction, and you can deceive them. And she wrote lots of things, Isis Unveiled and The Key to Theosophy and The Voice of the voice of silence, you know, let it sound like one hand clapping or something, you know. The sounds of silence, you know, Simon and Garfunkel should write a song about that. Oh, wait, they did. But anyway, the point is, religion used to be how you fulfilled your duty to God and your fellow man. And if you go back to the ancients, the archaic wisdom, you would know. Free societies bound themselves together with religion, but religion wasn't what you thought about God. It wasn't a bunch of guys chanting around the campfire and doing hocus pocus and witchcraft. It was people who actually cared about one another, were there for one another, were backing up one another, that answered the hue and cry of one another when there was difficulties. Because these people were out in the woods living deliberately. They needed one another to survive, whether it was bears and wolves or starvation in the winter or some enemy coming to maraud and steal from them. They needed to have fellow members of their society that would be there backing them, watching their back, protecting them, helping them out when they needed help, when they were stuck in a bog or whatever it was. They needed that brotherhood to survive. A very practical religion, which was how you did that, how you provided for one another. And of course, those systems required sacrifice, and they all had their Kohens or their priests, but not to burn up stuff for some invisible god, but to actually make sure to keep track. These were the heads of the platoons of society. They were not ruling over the people, because they had no power to do that, but they were respected and their choices were respected, and they worked to make their tribes and their tribes of tribes united so that no one could overcome them, because to attack one was to attack all for one and one for all. But anyway, in one of the books, she actually quotes somebody else, but she actually says this: it is Satan who is the god of our planet and the only god. And this without any elusive metaphor to its wickedness and depravity. And it says that Satan was always considered good. Well, he wasn't always considered good. He was called the light bringer or light bearer. But the reason they call him the light bearer is because of the fact that he carried his own light, because he was not connected to the light of righteousness, the tree of life. He had gone out of the presence of that, and he was a god, and she even writes small g god, and to some degree is a god of this planet, because we were to hold dominion, but we have not dressed it and kept it, which is why we're poisoning our society. I mean, people talk about the new curriculum, and that's appropriate that they mention that, the new core curriculum, I think they call it. Well, we have a core curriculum. Congregations of recorded elders gathering together in groups of tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands to help you homeschool your children. And that's the way to get the federal government out of your education of your children, is to start doing it yourself. Ron Paul advocates that everybody, and that's what he was saying just the other day, he said it many times before, that he is advocating he's going to support homeschooling with every bit of energy he can, because that is essential to a free society, is that we take back that responsibility. Not only will you be able to pick curriculums, and there's a lot of curriculums, you know, we share them, we trade them amongst each other, and the Robinson curriculum is really popular amongst a lot of people, but you get to mold and shape it any way you want, and that creates diversity in your society. But you need to become that society. You need to become that free society by taking back your responsibilities to education, food. Where are you going to get your food? Certainly, I encourage people to try to get these companies that are producing poisoned foods and using the wrong kind of ingredients that are poisoning us and anybody who walks into their stores or restaurants, and we should try to hold their feet to the fire. But ultimately, you realize that you need to take responsibility for the production of your food yourself. You need to find out if it's kosher, not whether or not some rabbi has blessed it, but whether or not it was grown the way they say it was grown. You don't want to buy food just because they say it's organic. You want to have ministers that actually know the source of your food. In CSA, networks where you know who's growing it and what they're doing there, because you actually have people on the ground that are there, and they know the farmers and they know the ranchers that are producing that food, because the contamination is everywhere. And money is controlling the minds and hearts of most of the people, and they don't care if there's blood running in the streets. They want to make a success. But there are many of you that are waking up and want to make a difference and want to change and want to change your ways. The answer is not new wine and old wineskin. It is not fixing the federal government schools so that they're your schools. They're not going to be. Your home's not your home. Your labor's not your labor. Your schools are not yours, and they're not going to be. It's fine to make a ruckus and to try to get them to see the foolishness of their ways, but you need to also understand the strategy. A lot of people thought, well, we're going to put everything into getting Ron Paul elected, and he's going to straighten things out. And I wrote an article, Plan B. You got to realize that you're not going to. You know, if Ron Paul was elected, he'd been dead already. Somebody would have shot him. They're just not going to let. And he even himself says he can't straighten it all out. But you can start straightening it out in your relationship with the rest of the world by gathering together and start becoming health, education, and welfare, becoming the faith emergency ministry auxiliary, becoming that part of society which stands for righteousness, not stands for some particular religious dogma, but the dogma of Christ, the doctrine of Christ, which is to love thy neighbor as thyself. And you can't do that unless you gather together to do it. So anyway, we see this New Age society being born with some of the things that she says, but she doesn't even know the definition of religion. She thinks it's what you think about the ethereal plane or something. And there's a lot of truth in some of the things she says, but she was dragging people in a different direction, and her motivations were different than what they should have been. And I don't want to pick on individuals, but someone who's was very instrumental in changing the way in which we think of religion, and she helped them change the definition of religion. Because if you go back, she was back in 1875 where they started the Theosophical Society. And then she lived a long time after that. But the point is that she was already altering. If you go back to the Constitution, the definition of religion was the performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. And it was how you took care of the needy of your society. She changed it into thinking, she was one of them. There were a lot of other people changing the definition, changing the way we think of religion as some sort of study of God, our opinion of God. And she was very instrumental in helping people like the Rockefellers take the next step, and the next step, and the next step. And now we have the core curriculum coming along, taking another step. And you're going to fight against it. And they love that dialectic of you fighting against it, because blood is running in the streets. And you'll just wear yourself out fighting. What the answer is to start helping one another, educate your children in your homes, gather together in homeschool groups, and share amongst yourselves, and inform congregations so that the elderly of your congregation, for those parents who have to both work, can help you. If you don't have grandparents who can help you, you'll have the members of your congregation that will help you so that you can educate your children yourselves. And you will just be shocked at what your kids can learn and achieve. And you will unleash wild horses, because they, if you do this right, you will be absolutely amazed at how bright and intelligent your kids are. Some of the people talk about vaccinations and how dangerous they are in your rights. Well, if someone else has the responsibility of taking care of your health, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, new Obamacare, and all this stuff, they're going to have the dictatorial power to compel you to take whatever vaccination they want to give you. Because they're the ones who are responsible. They're the ones paying the bill. They get to control what's going to go into your body and what's not going to go into your body. If you want your rights back, you have to take back your responsibilities. You have to become responsible for your health. I've been visiting in convalescent homes and hospitals, and I see people being literally poisoned in those places, kept from things that will help heal them. there's this, again, cognitive dissonance where they don't really see. I mean, some of them are well-intentioned, but there's like a fog over their minds where they can't see that there are alternatives that would actually help. And you feel so frustrated because people have made gods of doctors, and we need to repent of that. And I tell you, there's no end to what we could learn and what we could establish. If we would gather together and start networking, we would become this, you know, not Google, but His Holy Church network, or the Living Network. We use the word Living Network so people don't get all hung up with the word church. If we were working together on a day-to-day basis, just touching base and trying to get more and more people in each area working and doing, sharing a little time here and there, we would start developing those relations that will be so critical when things fall apart. And things will fall apart. American politicians recently pretended to solve the spending problem without cutting any spending. Only in America could you do that. The national debt was, at one time, these are a little bit older figures, but $14.5 trillion, and it's changing so rapidly I can't even keep up with the figures. But in one article referred to it as that, but they say by 2021 it will be $23 trillion. But it's probably that those are inaccurate figures. I'm not even sure we're getting close to hitting that already. So anyway, but we have this huge welfare system. Everybody's got an EBT card, and they're part of the SNAP system, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And there's over 50,000 Americans standing in an invisible virtual reality bread line because they have EBT cards. 50 million Americans. 5 million Americans are on welfare. There's 50 million Americans on Medicaid. And Medicaid's just changed some rules, make them even more autocratic. Somebody in one of the places I was visiting was saying, "Do you know anything about Medicaid? Because they just changed all the rules and they're going to take every last dime we have." And yeah, that's right. You've got ministers who exercise authority one over the other, and this is what you get. They're going to suck the life out of you, and then they're going to give you poisons and call it medicine. But anyway, 8 million Americans receiving unemployment, and actually that number's probably changed. There's 10.5 million Americans on Social Security disability, and this is this symbolic breadline that we're all in. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Every mind must make its choices between truth and repose. It cannot have both. So if you want the truth, you have to provide for it. And when you are providing for the truth, you will find out more truth." And that's really the key. We've got a lot more stuff that we're going to share with you, and we'll get back in it. We talked about some of it in Session 6. We'll make all this available to people eventually on the Living Network. And that's really what I have to recommend, that everybody join the Living Network. Form congregations of record. Start doing like these Free Society, the Teutons, the early Israelites, the early church were doing, because the economy is in a lot of trouble. You listen to people. Economists who are not, you know, working for Fox News, but other economists say that it's only a matter of time. Some are giving it months, some are giving it years. Most will say they don't know. But the economy is in serious, serious trouble, and this desire for free bread and circuses is not going to cut it. You have to have a desire to know the whole truth and nothing but the truth and provide for it. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.